Hi, my name is Michael Poli, and I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My friends are obsessed and always make jokes and references to it, and so now, 20 years later, I've been convinced to watch the show from beginning to end, one episode a week. I'm a Buffy virgin.
Hey, sorry I'm late, guys.
No, you're right on time.
Right on time.
How have you been, man? I was worried about the wildfires. I was worried that you were caught up in a fire.
Yeah, I'm okay. It was the next county over.
No, it's calm down.
Sorry, that's the dog talking.
Well, has the dog seen the witch? If he has, he can talk. If he hasn't, he's in trouble.
Well, she was in the room.
That's fair. I'll give it to that. So you're safe from the wildfires?
Yeah, safe for now, yeah.
Yeah, for now, that's true. I mean, at least you don't live on a hellmouth.
Yeah.
He's getting these jokes now, Dennis. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. Yeah. Okay, I think we're ready over here. So I'm recording. Let me just check. My name is Michael Poli. I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So we are now, once a week, chronologically going through Buffy, and I'm learning about all the different references that I've missed out on my entire life. That's generally the story of this podcast. But anyway, I'm Michael. I'm a video producer. And then over here, we've got Travis.
Yep. Hi, everyone. I'm Travis. I've seen all of Buffy and Angel, and so I'm well-versed in this universe. We're watching today season 1, Episode 3, The Witch, original air date March 17th, 1997. And we have a great new person on the podcast who will introduce themselves now.
Hey, guys. I'm Dennis. I'm a horror cartoonist, and I've been friends with these guys almost as long as Buffy has been on the air, but not quite. And I've been watching Buffy since before, I met them, but before we were friends.
Yeah. Well, as Travis likes to point out, when this aired, we were literally in high school, probably about the same grade that Buffy was. I mean, she's a junior.
One grade below.
She was a sophomore, and we were freshmen.
Okay, so she's a sophomore, okay.
Yeah. I know. I don't know what to have done. Ever since it went off air, I started experiencing things for the first time without a 1 year older woman experiencing them first. So, all right. Okay, so let's dive into the episode.
All right. So, this is episode 3. So, last week I made some predictions about what I thought would happen in the forthcoming episode. Some of those appear to be coming true. So, however, I was surprised that no vampires in this episode, and it opens with Buffy dressed as a cheerleader. I kind of thought that the cheerleading stuff that appeared in the intro was kind of a joke, but very seriously, Buffy is excited about being a cheerleader at the start of this episode.
This episode begins with the incredible tradition of witty banter between Buffy and Giles. I mean, this is the definition. I mean, there's just so much witty banter throughout this whole episode. But yeah, I think we'll come back to her being a cheerleader, but there's nothing technically wrong. It's 1997. The world is a bit safer. Being a cheerleader is still something.
I think the thing of her being a cheerleader in this episode is it's only episode 3, and this is the most like the movie that the series is going to get. It's going to be, it's like, hey, this, remember the movie? This is like it, but also see how it's different. Because in the movie, she's a cheerleader, and in this one, she's just has this one cheerleader episode where we kind of set up who she used to be, that she used to like being a cheerleader, but she's definitely got other things going on now.
Well, it definitely feels like it's a complete reset from the first two episodes, because there's no funeral for Jesse, no mention of Jesse.
Does not exist anymore.
No mention of all the murders at the Bronze that took place in episode 2. So
you get used to that in Sunnydale.
Yeah, and watching this again after so many years, this episode totally highlights the Buffy problem of collateral damage and the consequences for innocent people that are killed or hurt throughout this entire series. And again, this episode, what happens in it. That definitely there's many innocent victims, and really there's consequences for one person, but we don't see the side damage too much to the unnamed characters or the little named characters. But scene one opens with Buffy, Giles. Keep going, Dennis.
Oh, well, we can talk about it when it comes up, but okay. I was reflecting on how much, like, Cordelia suffers in this episode, and everybody still kind of laughs at her at the end, or, like, she's treated as a cruel character, but it's like, she went through a lot. Like, we didn't see any of it.
Oh, yeah.
She was blind for days, so.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. We'll talk about that. I think, I have a bit I wanted to say about that, but I don't know. I mean, you know, scene one, Buffy, you know, Buffy Giles, you know, again, lots of library stuff. So this is where we're really heading into the meat of the series where so much action takes place in the library.
And then do we kind of introduce the witch right away before the...
We do. We got Buffy wants to be a cheerleader and Giles saying, I forbid it. And you know, she's kind of like... I want something normal and safe in my life. And so I, you know, of course, like everything in Sunnydale, you want something normal and safe. It's not going to be normal or safe at all. So, you know, it's obviously the classic Buffy sort of interest, you know, turn everything on its head, as Mike always likes to say for Buffy. This is turning being a cheerleader on its head.
Everything in the inverted world of Joss Whedon, Everything is the opposite of the setup that you'd think. It's just like the like easy formula. And that proves true throughout this entire episode. So we get to the... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so we see one little bit of cheerleading tryouts and a girl's hands catch on fire before the opening credits. So.
Yeah. And, but then...
Yeah.
Spontaneous human combustion. It's very rare.
Well, we missed this this great opening scene which highlights all the problems with lighting. Dennis, you missed us complaining about lighting issues all of season one and season two. But scene two, there's a cauldron, this wonderful green bubbling cauldron, and you can't hardly see anything. The scene is so darkly lit. It's unbelievable. But there's also this incredible doll collection. And anyway, so that can be talked about later on. But yeah,
I want to talk about that crazy house.
Unbelievably amazing house, yeah. But, yeah, all right.
So the cheerleading tryout, like, it's the mood is really tense. Like, people are a little bit too good. Is it Amber? I don't know who's the woman that's up. But Amber Grove is like this amazing cheerleader, and she, you know, we know later why, but like, you know, her hands catch on fire during her performance, which is really crazy and completely unpredictable as far as I could tell. Like, it seemed to be out of nothing. And then Buffy's this incredible first responder. Everybody else is just standing there, and then she, bam, runs in and saves her. I thought that was rad, but at the same time, her tactic is like, I laughed out loud when she jumped on her, and like, because they just knocked to the ground. Like, it's not a pretty scene.
No, it's a little violent to save someone. But again, this is Buffy. This is not a vampire. This is like the innate goodness and like the quick thinking that nobody that people.
Well, know, also not, this she's, this she's is known a school for, but... where all of the fire suppression. I didn't see any. Fire. What do you call?
Well, there's an axe.
Yeah, they have fire axes.
Yeah, they have fire extinguishers. Which also don't operate through doors you can open. You have to punch through the glass.
I mean, in a school where there is no fire extinguishers, then yes, I imagine knocking someone to the ground as quickly as possible. It just gets you 90% of the way there, I guess. But I don't know. I was counting up people Buffy had literally saved. And, you know, there's a couple here, and there's no vampires. It's all very interesting, I think.
I think it should totally be mentioned that this is the third episode, and we abandoned vampires completely, which I think is really smart, because it's setting up what the rest of the series is. I mean, they say it, I think, in the first episode, probably, the Hellmouth invites a lot of things, not just vampires, but now it's really establishing, she's called the Vampire Slayer, but we're going to experience every kind of monster we can think of. Which is a larger setup and makes for a more fun show than, like, if it's all the same monster every week.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was happy with the choice, because I just assumed after the second episode there'd just be more vampires. Like, the old one would just have another henchman, you know, instead of, what is it, Luke or whatever. You know, we'll just see some more weird old guys show up.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, so I mean, the next scene in the next scene in the library, you know, is this exposition where we're talking about, you know, Giles is saying, or, you know, Buffy's like, this is funky, right? Not the norm. Like, so she's still sort of wondering, like, she has yet to expand her worldview outside of just vampires. But then, of course, you know, Giles is super excited. You know, this is the Hellmouth. That's the thrill of living on the Hellmouth, right? And so Giles is, you know, as Issa said, forgive me for being a glass half full type of person. But you know, so that's a pretty, you know, so that's the scene where they just said they set up everything sort of unusual, you know.
And is that also the scene where Xander and Willow are like, we want to help out and be part of the team?
Basically, it seems like at this point, Buffy and Giles could kick them out of the show. They could be like, no, you guys are kids. Cut it out. Because all they can basically do at this point is research.
Yeah, they're not super helpful yet. And I love it. Like, we're the team, or are we? Like, yeah, maybe Willow might have hacking skills. Xander has horn dog skills. Like, he's not, it's not really useful.
Yeah, Xander is a real creep in this episode in a way I don't. Watching it in high school, I don't remember him being that creepy, but rewatching, his aggressive sexuality is really off-putting. I mean, if these guys are friends and he's constantly making advances.
Like... Yeah, because he makes advances on everybody that like might like him, even a little bit, exception of Willow, but like, he tries to, you know, pick up Buffy this episode, and also, I think Catherine. Oh, no, not Catherine. It's Amber or whatever. But yeah, I mean, he just tries to pick up everybody. So in any event, then we cut back to Buffy's house, and her mom is about to curate some exhibit on primitive art. I guess she's a museum curator.
It's this amazing, like, private gallery that she runs. It's pretty, yeah, it's a pretty unbelievable, fun
prediction show. She and Giles could get together based on this. Like, they have a lot in common. Also, their mutual interest things. In looking after Buffy.
But actually, you notice, when I was watching this scene between Buffy and her mom, you know, I mean, clearly this is, like, the mom isn't really paying attention to the daughter, right? This is a lot of my complaints about the boomers, you know, being involved in their own work, their own life. You know, Buffy's mom
not noticing their daughter's incredible super strength.
Oh man, she tells her mom she's a vampire slayer in this episode, and I do not remember that, which is just amazing. Like,
yeah, I mean, just the dismissive nature of this mom calling her past adventures "quote unquote" the trouble.
No, what I love about this scene is like the banter back and forth between Buffy and her mom. To me, not only felt really natural, it was Gilmore-esque, and this is like 3 or 4 years before Gilmore comes on, and that of course also has a mom and her daughter.
Gilmore-esque, not a word.
Gilmore-esque is entirely a word. It exists now. It didn't exist 20 years ago, Mike. Okay, this is pre-Gilmore, but I don't know. Their banter it wasn't like the level of, you know, literary references but it wasn't quite as quick as between. You know, Lorelai and Rory, but actually, I don't know. I felt like it was good. This was like a really good natural scene. I felt between them.
The vocab on this show is really impressive. Like in the first scene where the cheerleader catches fire and somebody's like, "She's on fire." Cordelia's response is hyperbole.
Oh, I mean, that was an amazing.
Like, I don't think I would casually drop that word. Now as an adult, I'm very impressed with children.
Yeah, they have a great vocabulary. Anyways,
come on, package.
One of the weird things about watching it now is how young they look. Like, because they were always a little bit older than me, right? But during a rewatch, they definitely are kids.
No, they still look quite young, even though they are like 3 to 4 years older on average.
Yeah, I assume they're in their early 20s. But Buffy has like a baby face.
She is extremely young in this episode. I mean, it's season one. This is amazing. These are amazing times.
Their whole terrible life is right in front of them.
It is. I don't know.
So what's the scene now? So then Mom's got her museum exhibit. Buffy exhibits her powers. She opens up. Effortlessly opens a crate. Mom doesn't even notice. After asking her to help, it's like you're saying about the boomers, it's like the rule is parents can't literally see what their kids are up to.
Yeah.
They're communicating with what their perception of their kids are and not the reality, which, you know, that hangs out. That's basically the cheerleader story.
Yeah.
So then we get to, I think we're back to more cheerleading.
Tryouts.
And
this
we
is
see,
where
like,
we first really talk to Amy.
Exactly.
and we see like that Amy is seriously living under her mom's shadow, and cheerleading is super serious.
She's also really braggy about her mom, like in a way a teenager would not be. Like, that is weird behavior. Be like,
no.
Oh.
Yes, no, but and so this is the timeline issue. I'm going to break the timeline here for a second because this is my big issue. When I watched the episode the first time, I did not realize this. But when I rewatched the episode, when I watched it twice recently. This is not Amy we're talking to. This is the mom in Amy's body. And that's why she's so weird in all of these scenes, talking about her mom, bragging about my mom. I can't get my body to move like hers. This is Kate, aka Amy's mom, inside of Amy's body, complaining about Amy's body not being as agile as her own body used to be. Like, so this we think we meet Amy in this episode, and we do. This is the first appearance of Amy. I think that's why it's notable for the future. It's the first appearance of real magic.
Oh, Amy's going to come back? She's a continuing character?
I didn't break any. I'm not. I'm no comment.
Is there anything there even? Anyway, well,
I'm just saying this is notable. And number two, so I think everything we have to say about Amy, we don't know anything about Amy except towards the end, she's, you know, that. But this is all Kate. This is all Kate, her mom. But it's amazing. Like, when I watched it the first time recently, I totally, like, thought this was Amy, like, talking. I'm like, this lady's really weird. And then I rewatched, I'm like, oh, this is Kate. This is crazy. Anyways, I that's what I love. I love that it's, like, the second watching gift and they gave it a lot more depth. And also, I love in this episode where they hack in to find out what's Amber's backstory, because the Scooby Gang is still sort of wondering, maybe Amber was the bad character, but not a victim, which is, of course,
oh, when
really,
they're looking to see
really
who's checked out
universe.
Books on witches, right? As, like, their investigation practice.
Well, the best part is, you know, Amber's backstory could be anything, right? It's all fiction. But with like, the Joss and the creators come up with this backstory, average student previously in trouble for smoking. Just regular smoking. And it's just like, they couldn't make it up any story. But I laugh for like 5 minutes because they just make a smoking joke. Like,
just
a general smoking joke. And it's just hilarious. Like, it's so needless and wonderful.
But so Giles has helped them, like, he facilitates their investigation of students, right? Like, he is not a serious instructor or librarian in any way.
No,
and
he's a watcher.
Is he paid
by
the school?
He is a librarian of a library that no one ever goes into. Only this gang is ever operating out of. So
which
he's
not
very,
to
really
students.
This, he's not really totally a librarian, Mike.
He's totally a Doc Brown character, right? He's this weird, older character that has no business hanging out with young kids, that is just on a completely different timeline. Like, his knowledge of esoteric vampire and mysticism and magic is just on a complete other level, and it just comes out in this episode in a crazy way. Where I was like, he doesn't say hop in, Marty. There's no time to explain. Like, there's still like that level of intensity in this episode from some of his like when they try and save Buffy. Like, that stuff is crazy, and like it just takes a slight tweaking of the script to turn him into a supremely evil character. You know, moving forward, like, we see examples of his power and like, oh, he's a good guy. Like, what? He could go either way.
he would be in real life a very dangerous pseudo authority figure. Because, I mean, he brings in all of these strange books. And basically, I don't know how big the library is. We never see the stacks, really. But it seems like he clears out all of the normal library books and introduces only his, like, magic books.
Well, I think this brings up a great point. I think since you've never seen this, Mike, this is hitting home. So I'd love to hear your opinion, because you don't really understand what the Watcher is. Because you're like kind of, to me, I'm like, oh yeah, it makes total sense. This guy's not a real librarian. He doesn't really care about the school. His job, what I know, is way different than what you're saying. So right now, your opinion of this guy is like, why does he know this stuff? Why is he not like a real teacher? Like, is it still kind of mysterious?
Why does he need to pretend to be a teacher? Why does he have to do that? Pretend to be a librarian, whatever. Like, he literally could run that town. Like, he has access to magical powers. I mean, this is the classic Superman problem, right? Where it's like, Superman is good because he's supposed to be good, but like, he has the power to do anything. Like, Giles has all this incredible power and access to it, but he's a Watcher, right? Or he chooses to be a Watcher. Like, he is possibly more powerful than Buffy, you know, and Buffy is just like brute strength and you point her in a direction, right? Like, Giles is like access to legit magic, and then also has an understanding of the supernatural world that's deeper than any other character. Anyway, I don't know how he's a good guy. I'm glad he is, but like it seems like he was conscripted like to fight in this bizarro Slayer military. But I don't understand why he's what motivates him.
Okay.
I think maybe we'll find out.
I think we might.
All right. All right, Bruce.
Well, I'm glad that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but now, which is interesting. All right,
it's interesting to me that you didn't feel like it got set up in the first two episodes, any. So that's kind of.
Yeah, you're still like, why is he still here? I mean, I guess I can tell you, he keeps telling her he's her watcher, and so eventually that is explained better in the next couple episodes for you.
So let's move on to cheerleading tryouts. And we see that Cordelia, we're starting to see that she is incredible. I mean, she continues to be incredibly vapid. And her confrontation in the locker room with, I guess it's Amber, is insane.
Amy, sorry.
Sorry, I've got to write this down so I say the name right. Her confrontation is insane. It's like, you're like, the episode's called The Witch. Is Cordelia the witch? This is nuts.
Yeah,
her intensity... about how serious cheerleading is, like, it, you know, traditionally we've seen this kind of intensity around more like a sports themed movie that wasn't about cheerleading, right? That was about something maybe like Olympic trials, stuff like that. Like, that's just the level of intensity in this high school. And it was fun to see.
I don't know, Bring It On, things get pretty intense. Actually, I had some notes earlier about Cordelia. During the first scene where she shows up, she purposely goes up and talks to Buffy and Willow, which to me seems out of what her character is supposed to be, because she is a cruel, mean girl, right? But in that room full of cheerleaders and potential cheerleaders, like, she talks to Willow for some reason and gives her like snide comments to Willow as if they're friends. So I think I just think it's interesting to watch. Maybe Cordelia wants to be more part of this group than she is. I don't know. It's something to look for. I don't know.
I do. I think so. I agree with that because, you know, remember from the opening episode, Cordelia really takes to Buffy. Like, Buffy's going to be our new BFF, and then Willow kind of takes her away. And maybe some of that residual is still around.
What's the line in the first episode where she's like, Cordelia is really nice to me?
Yeah, that's what Buffy says. Yeah.
So immediately after Cordelia, she confronts Amy in the locker room. Then it's like, witches' spells are brewing. And then something effed up happens to Cordelia. It's like there's an immediate consequence for it, where she's now goes blind.
Yeah, that would be something interesting to keep track of, is how often Cordelia is the victim of something really terrible.
Okay, oh, yeah. I'll write
she
down.
Suffers a lot. She's blind. Yeah.
I think what's interesting here at tryouts is, why is Buffy nice to Amber, like, all of a sudden? Like, I don't know, to me, Amy, and see, even I did it. So why is Buffy nice to, well, she was nice, she saved Amber's life, and she's nice to Amy. It's like, this whole episode, there's this weird thing where Buffy and Amy's, or the woman that inhabits Amy's body, aka her mom, like, she tries to be friends with her. Like, she just wants to be so normal. Like, it just seems kind of random that you know, it just seems like a random friendship, like... She's like, come over to
Buffy's,
my house.
This is still, like, what, her second week of school?
Yeah, this is, like, her second week of school. Yeah,
she's still trying to make friends. She knows that Amy is old friends with her only real friend, Willow. Like,
yeah, that's true. She felt safe.
It seems like a natural expansion of what, you know, how you make friends. How a normal, adjusted person makes friends, anyway.
So, Cordelia gets punished. She goes blind, then she apparently has driver's ed that day, and, you know, nearly kills a bunch of people, like, and then this crazy scene where, like, she crashes or stops the car, she gets out, Cordelia gets out, and then blind, there's a UPS driver, it looks like, just heading straight for her, just barreling towards her. He must be blind, too, and, like, you're like, you can't believe this is happening, and then, Buffy jumps...
This is a school zone, man.
Buffy rushes in and saves the day, and I wanted to pull the sound effect, but I didn't, of, like, Buffy coming to her aid, because it's like, ba-dum-dum. It's like this rad little drum that comes in when she, like, jumps in to save her, that I think could be used any time an action moment takes place, because it was just like so perfect, so on the nose.
Yeah.
But Buffy saves her again. So Buffy saves, I don't know, now two people in this episode, right?
Yes.
All these two cheerleaders.
And I think
this isn't a very action-heavy episode.
No, there's hardly any action. But for this is great because this is Cordelia. We're seeing, like, I don't know if this is intentional or how intentional, but Cordelia, this is like the boy who cried wolf, because Cordelia's like, I don't want to drive today. I don't feel well. But the driver's like, yeah, you failed this already a couple times.
Oh, that's a good point.
Just very dismissive of this woman who you know, I'm sure normally gives all kinds of crazy excuses, right? Oh, yeah, she has all kinds of special treatment, crazy excuses. And now this is this comeuppance? This is the boy who cried wolf. You know, no one really feels sorry for her this episode, except for us, the audience. We feel sorry, but people are kind of like, I don't know. Have they met Cordelia, right?
There's a lot of cruelty that happens towards Cordelia this episode.
But that echoes the relationship with parents and their kids in this episode, where the driver is completely ignoring her. You know, that theme of like, oh, yeah, whatever. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And also, there are people in the back seat.
Oh, these are all the collateral.
Do they have to add stakes? Like, there's no reason.
Yeah, these are all the collateral damage. These people's lives were completely endangered. This is just like, just going to Sunnydale is just so dangerous. Like, it's unreal.
So it's after this then that they get the plan. They're going to figure out if she's a witch by this mixture of magical like ingredients. So this is where Xander and Willow are going to help out, which I like. You know, with an eye of a newt. I mean, this is
I like that the magic is happening in chemistry class. I think that's something the show kind of gets away from. But that's really charming. That's like...
It's so charming.
How you would do magic in high school, right?
Right, and conveniently, like, they're mixing magic while they're dissecting a frog, and a frog's eye will do. That's a newt, basically, right?
It was beautiful. A beautiful moment.
They're dissecting a frog, but there's also other chemicals involved, right?
There's track one and track two students.
The animated gif I would want to pull from this, though, is when Buffy pulls the hair off the hairbrush and then makes eye contact with with Amy. Because it's such a creepy, like, you know, the way it's cut together, like, there's a knowingness to it, which is weird. But I know it's not the intent. It's meant to be secretive. But, like, the hairbrush thing was kind of gross and rad.
Yeah, and her, the sleight of hand, I mean, it's for the camera, but that it is barely sleight of hand. It's sloppy of hand.
It's a troll pen, too, I think. It's this fluffy pen. Like, it's a horribly out-of-date pen.
What?
Like, that she drops.
Buffy's totally.
Anyways, and then, of course, Amy sees her. You see later in the episode, Amy says, like, why is she taking my hair? Like, so it didn't even work. Amy identifies this. She doesn't let
the idea is that she notices because she's a witch. She's like, you're pulling spells 101 on me, bitch. Like,
yeah.
And then during that, there's another attack. This dark-haired woman who now, like, can't... Like,
the only minority we've seen so far.
The only minority. I don't know if she was at cheerleading practice. She must be, I assume. Like,
oh, yeah.
Now,
that,
like,
she gets Matrix-faced.
Yeah. I wrote Japanese body horror. But yeah, Matrix-faced, totally.
Yeah, that's some creepy stuff. It wasn't, like, the best effect, but it's...
It wasn't bad.
The idea that the magic spell was not temporary at this point, so, like, for the rest of the episode, she's, like, in a hospital, maybe they're cutting her face open to create lips, like, we don't go into that, but, that's really terrible. And then what happens when the magic spell is reversed, like, but her face has been horribly scarred by surgeons, I don't know. We never get into that.
Yeah.
No, that's the off-camera scariness of this episode. You're totally right. Like, Cordelia blind for days. This woman having to get her face surgically opened. So at this point, go ahead, sorry.
And then I just want to talk about the next scene. We see Amy's house. And that gate to Amy's house is a friggin' devil gate. Like, did this used to be Anton LaVey's house? Like, what kind of crazy neighborhood is this normal that, like, there's a wrought iron devil face?
Yeah, this is amazing. It's an amazing house. There's, like, another, like, the front door is also mostly iron bars as well. And the house is all dark inside. I mean, it's just, like, this great, great moment.
But this scene is really fun because we'd assumed that, you know, it's Amy's mom was somehow the witch. And the kid was the prisoner. Based on the earlier conversation where Amy's, like, talking about how she can never do enough of what, you know, she's working so hard to, like, cheer, you know, do 3 hours of cheerleading practice in the morning, three at night, like, just some of this crazy schedule that apparently we assume her mom leads her on. And then she heads back. When she heads home, we learn it's the opposite, that mom is the prisoner and that she rules the house. And this really scary role reversal scene, I thought was, like, kind of
it's purposely played near Buffy mom scenes, and we could see what the difference is between that. Yeah, totally a creepy scene.
But I really enjoyed that scene. And then, so I don't think we quite understand all the wrinkles of the relationship at that point. But
I think we assumed at that point Amy is the bad girl and the mom is a victim.
Right.
We don't know they switch bodies. The actual sleight of hand was done by Amy, who actually took Buffy's bracelet. So the only sleight of hand that worked was off screen.
Which Xander gave her earlier in the episode.
Yes. Yeah, which we can come back to.
And I wanted to say, I think it would have been funny. What I thought the first time is, like, this is the object that you need to take to cast a spell on Buffy. But since it was a gift from Xander, and he obviously cares about it more than Buffy, who barely kind of noticed it, wouldn't it be funny if the spell worked on Xander instead by accident? Like, that's not what happened, but no. That's what I immediately thought. Like, oh, poor Xander. He's going to die.
Yes. Well, I think the Buffy's universe is pretty consistent that whoever's charm it is that you steal, whoever's bracelet or necklace or whatever that's owned and is cast a spell upon affects them. I think they're pretty consistent, maybe. You think about that later. But okay. But the next scene is just like this amazing scene. Buffy comes down singing Macho Man and is kind of like super like energetic. I think she totally nails this scene as an actress. Like, to me, this is like, there's nothing wrong here. There's no wasted time. There's no wasted breath. The interaction is bing, bing, bing. I mean, it's like a perfectly like strange scene. And this shows how crazy I am. I mean, it's got great prop use. It's got great timing. It's short. I don't know. I love this scene where she's talking with her mom, says, I'm a vampire slayer, is crazy about juice. I love it. I wish I could have 40 more minutes of that scene.
It's a fun scene, but it feels pretty superfluous to me. You could cut that scene. I don't know why it's necessary, except to set up slightly before Buffy has her, like, cheerleading freak out. Like, because that might have been too abrupt to go right into the curse.
I also think it's funny everyone else gets cursed and they're immediately disfigured. Like, Buffy's the main character. She's not going to get that kind of curse. She's going to get, like, this longer curse that at first is just comedic.
Well, you know, you want your death curse to at least start out comedic. But I don't know. To me, this is great. Not only is it a shout out to the Macho Man, but I don't know.
Man's YMCA.
Or yeah, I don't know. It's just very strange.
Shout out to WWE, WWF.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is the curse, right? The curse is like this vengeance spell, but
yes.
What is the actual curse? Like, she's
going to die.
She's just going to die, right? Like, but you're saying, like, the other
because
curses...
she's not only the cheerleader.
Yeah, it's a lot less specific than the other curses. The other curses are like,
yeah,
catch on fire, you
hurt a body part.
Yeah,
this is a generic slow death curse.
I don't know. I mean,
Giles gives some description, but it's a fairly meaningless description. It's just like, I don't know. Yeah, it starts off
it's
as
like
funny
poison.
Because we want some funny scenes, but then she dies.
Yeah.
But the point of it, I think, is to. Since this episode, she's not facing, like, a giant monster. She's facing a human that she could defeat physically, like, in a second. Like, we need to incapacitate
yes.
her for the most of the third act to be, like, now there's real stakes. Because even though Buffy could just punch her problems away most of the time, in this case she can't. She's has to be carried
around.
And
this raises, like, really interesting points for the whole series, which is, you know, it's hard enough being a vampire slayer on a hellmouth fighting vampires, but the reality is, it's not like she just has to fight vampires. She has to fight witches. She's going to be in danger from all kinds of problems. There's no normal. I mean, there's two things. One, she has so many more enemies than she thinks she has. Two, she plays such an important role in saving the world. Saving the world. She's very important, it seems, as if for world safety. And any just random bad creature could take her out. It doesn't have to be the master. And I don't know, to me, that's all very
The master?
The master is that vampire we've been seeing a bunch
of
in the first
one.
The old one, yeah. So it's like, you know, to me, the old one in the crypt down there. So it just, I don't know, to me, this is sort of like very, I don't know, it's sort of eye-opening how horrible this girl's life is.
You know what it reminded me of? Her being incapacitated. Do you guys remember the RoboCop live action series?
No.
So like, it's not a great series, but part of the problem is RoboCop is so much stronger. Like, he's mostly fighting street level crime in that show. So he's so much stronger than everyone else that almost every episode he gets incapacitated by something. So for a majority of the episode, he's knocked out until he can finally, like, oh, the virus in my system has been cleaned out, or like, you know, whatever, the servo has been fixed, so we can defeat the bad guy in like a minute.
Yeah. So just one of that's like all the
when you have a character so superpowered that like normal levels of fighting aren't a danger, you have to knock them out for a while, which is kind of like the show luckily doesn't rely on that too much, but it's a little bit weak sauce writing, right?
Totally. It's remind that's the totally the formula for the first 100 issues of Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man's so powerful, it's like he has to get a cold, he has to have... Also, he can't... he's got to be able to photograph himself, he's got to be two places at once, he's got to be Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Just like all these stupid reasons why he can't be at full strength all the time. Weak sauce. You're totally weak sauce writing. That's absolutely what
well,
it is.
Yeah. I mean, and also maybe the world is more dangerous. Maybe this is also just saying, you know... The world is even more dangerous than you could even imagine.
Travis, I love that you will defend like that this show has no mistakes at all.
No, it has plenty of mistakes. I was talking about mistakes earlier. No, I'm just saying maybe that it's certainly, you know, that's, you know, maybe I'm inscrutable as well. I'm inscrutable.
Much
like Buffy is inscrutable and all children are inscrutable. I mean, the best mistake is when Giles is like, When Willow's like, we have to get her to a hospital, and Giles is like, they can't help her. I mean, just like this, like the ludicrous. Yeah, right. I mean, you know. Anyways, I think that's a great. They can't help her. I mean, it's just like it is automatic. Like,
yeah.
She's being cursed by the supernatural. We must use the supernatural to save her, which is like Buffy logic 101.
Why doesn't Giles like? Why isn't there like a supernatural ER that Giles is in charge of? That's what he should be doing at this high school. Like,
right.
A girl with
and
her
think,
face covering up?
There should have been, like, you know, if you're out on a quest in D&D and somebody gets magically hurt, there are potions that can, like, heal you to 50% or something, right?
He should just brew up a couple in advance.
Like, obviously these writers never played D&D. They don't have that basic level of...
Well, anyway. I thought he was very sweet when he was carrying her around when she's looks like she has, like, you know, the avian bird flu. And she's dying.
So Giles knows just what to do. They go to Amy's house.
Yeah, to quickly summarize it, yeah.
And then, you know, that's where they find that, I guess, Catherine, her mom, is trapped there. Catherine the Great. And that they figure out the body reversal. In this weird scene where it takes her, like, it feels like kind of realistically portrayed in a way. Where the woman's like, oh, no, you're not allowed here. And then they, you know, she quickly dissembles and reveals the truth of the matter about how she's imprisoned there. And of course, the clue is the brownies. I mean, that the Willow had brownies with her, and she always used to love brownies, and they'd pig out in secret together at Willow's house. Is this
Buffy? I gotta say, Buffy, she's almost knocked out at this point. She really puts it together pretty quick. She's like, she can follow these plot threads really well. Good for her.
And then Giles, they go upstairs, they're looking for the spell book. Apparently they have the spell book. They can reverse all the spells. They finds a room full of creepy dolls hanging around a cauldron.
Is that when there's a big luggage, a big trunk that's got a cat in it?
Yes.
Which is a shot from the opening scene. Yes. I always like when you see an episode where you're like, oh, there's a shot from the opening scene.
There's two. There's the bubbling cauldron and the cat, I think, at least in this episode that's in the opening credits.
And the cheerleading scene.
So three. So this is very important so that the opening credits start making more
sense
to Michael.
Season one credit scene, yeah.
But I also love, like, can we talk, the dolls are great because they have, like, little, they have the cheerleading outfits. Like, someone in props had to make the little outfits that go on these freaking dolls. Like, they're wearing the cheerleading outfits that I don't know, I just, like, it's great prop work. Like, I'm just going to go out and say it. It's good prop work.
It is, yeah. They got a good art department. Not a great lighting department, maybe. But the last time I did a Buffy rewatch was like 5 years ago with a then girlfriend, and she hadn't seen the series before, so we actually, I think we watched 2 episodes of season one and skipped the rest. So I had kind of this feeling of like season one is really weak, and it can basically be skipped. But I was impressed with this episode. I think maybe I was wrong with my dismissal of season one.
Oh, well, that's interesting to hear. So you would skip this normally?
Yeah. What I would do, if I'm like recommending Buffy to somebody, I'll say watch the first 2 episodes of season one, and then watch episode 7, Angel, maybe, and definitely watch the last episode because it's really good. And then that gives you all you need for season one.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever. I will say it's all essential, but. This is an important episode. We're understanding magic in this world and Latin. We're understanding the importance of Latin will never be escaped. I'll break a timeline. Latin will be important forever. I mean, it's still important. This is old school enough that Latin still has importance. So, anyways, so get used to it. Any spells, magic, Latin, Angel or Buffy.
So we assume all the spells are going to be reversed somehow. Then there's this very creepy, bizarro Giles that has casting magic while putting his hands in dry ice.
Yeah, when he put his hands in the spell, I was like, Jesus.
I know, that's great commitment. I was like, that shit looks like it hurts. Even if it's dry ice, that's cold, bro. That's cold.
Something about, like, it looks like he's going to be injured by taking on the pain or whatever she's experiencing. Like, the stuff he's saying, which maybe is Latin, but it's also English.
It's a mixture.
It's a mixture, right? Like, he puts his hands right in there, and it's like, something about taking on her pain.
Yeah. No, it sounds like he will, like, take my strength. It sounds like he's sacrificing his life for hers, to be quite honest. You know, this last scene, you know, sort of culminates an action scene. You know, it only works because Kate doesn't know what... you know, what a slayer is, right? So she, when Kate's back in her own body, she's fighting Buffy and she's a powerful witch, but, you know, it's kind of the culmination of no one as powerful as a slayer. And then, of course, it also has it's got a great horror gag, I mean, again, it gets sort of like situational gags where the mirror is a great gag, right? Not only is it like a shout out to like, is it Snow White or is it, I forget which of the Disney fables. There's the witch who's always looking in the mirror on the wall. Yeah. Anyway, so this is a great mirror gag at
Snow
a witch.
White, yeah.
You know, it's kind of a cool call out.
Yeah, I'd say this episode has two really well put together twists at the end. Body switch twist and the final being trapped in the trophy twist. Like, those are totally solid gags.
The eyes on the trophy are awesome. They're such like an Evil Dead style look to that. I did like that.
Yeah. So overall, I always ask Mike, you know, so what do you think about the pacing of this episode? What do you think about, what do you think about the pace? The reason I always ask you this question is, you know, you're a movie guy who doesn't like to watch TV. And so it's 44 minutes. I was looking 42 to 44 minutes. So how did you feel about this episode?
Unless I was watching this with you to do a podcast of, I would have shut this off when the woman's hands caught fire for no reason. In the first scene, but having stuck through beyond that, I enjoyed it. I thought like it took a while for the hook to get in me on this one, which was the twist of what's up with Amy, and like, you know, is she a witch? If so, how are witches handled in this universe? Because why is she in high school? What is she? What? And it was kind of a fun explanation for a witch, which is, you know, that she's trying to re-experience her youth in the most banal way possible by being good at cheerleading.
Oh, and that speaks to one of the big themes, I think, of the show, which is, like, high school is hell, literally. So, by expansion of that, like, if you look back fondly on high school and want to relive those moments, you literally do it, and you're a literal monster. Like, if you want to relive your high school experience, you are a monster.
Yeah, that's a really funny point. I saw the movie last night. It's a stupid film. It's
The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
No, the one with Kevin Hart and The Rock. It's like
Rock Hard.
Central Intelligence, right? And like, it's a story about going back to high school, also, and like how you know, Kevin Hart's character peaked in high school and hasn't, you know, hasn't really found himself as an adult. And anyway, just like shades of that story. Like, apparently we constantly need to tell that story of people that peak in high school for some reason. But yeah, I enjoyed that characterization of Amy. That was really fun.
So
pacing overall, once you got over that scene, was good. I mean, I was shocked by the body horror and like the punishments for people, like for Cordelia. Like that kept me engaged. It felt a little tough. Also, Xander's like such a horn dog that like I was constantly a little bit surprised at how the like my perception of what the 90s was, or like how TV worked in the 90s, was a little bit off. I forgot all the misogyny of the 90s. Like, there's...
How about character progression? Third episode in, how do you feel the characters are progressing?
Well, I think that Xander has regressed. It's the same episode one Xander. I don't see any new stuff. Same with Willow. It's like episode one Willow again. I do like Buffy trying to integrate herself. She's definitely the most interesting character in this episode, besides Amy, is Buffy. Kind of watching her try and her mom try and figure things out. This is the most interesting version of her mom that we've seen. We finally learned something about her mom. And then Cordelia is the same character again.
How about at the very end when Cordelia sees him in the hall and she's like sarcastic about like, oh, you didn't make the cheerleading squad. And it's like, you were just in the hospital for days. You were blind. Why are you being sarcastic to people right now?
I got made fun of this last podcast, Dennis, where I loved the concept of the Monster of the Week, and I got ragged on pretty hard. And this is another Monster of the Week. There's, you know, the only one who had consequences here was Kate. All innocent victims are back to normal. I mean, I guess you can presume, like, if you're like me and overly accepting of all the faults, you can presume like this isn't the first time something horrible has happened to any of their friends that no one can explain in Sunnydale. So everyone.
Oh no! Like, I think the assumption is that this is a terrible town where people die all the time.
Yeah. So it's like she has no PTSD after being blind for days, you know. And I mean, it's like there's so many of those inconsistencies, and yet the consistency. Yeah.
Because I'm also this was a fun rewatch for me, partially because on Netflix right now, what I'm watching is like I just finished From Dusk Till Dawn, the series, and I'm watching Penny Dreadful. And those shows have no reset, you know, they just keep going, but any particular episode that isn't really distinct for it. So these, being able to have that reset and having characters adjust again, maybe is what helps episodes be more distinct. It gives each episode more of a full arc than, like, I mean, yeah, there's so many shows now that it's just this large overall continuity, and where one episode... the events began in the others and is a little harder to like distinguish in your mind. I'd say this is more like at least season one and two are like the high school, the Sunnydale High School is basically like being a member of the Enterprise, and you just never know what's going to happen to you this week, and then no one's ever going to mention it again next week.
Well, yes, to a large extent, I think.
That's a really solid point, Dennis. I totally agree with that, about the grayness of TV now. There's nothing that stands out as an episode. We missed one little scene that we kind of interesting to bring up, is that was when Xander and Willow, they confront Amy in the hall before she goes to fight Buffy, like to kind of stall for time. And like they completely fail, but it's super charming that they try, even though they don't really have a plan. And like the fact they don't have a plan is super clear, and it makes me like those characters, even though as a team they don't. What they add is like, you know, like Buffy could handle all this herself at this point. Like, they're like, this could be just Buffy and Giles the show. It doesn't need Xander and Willow, but they're
point,
insisted
yeah.
there's
but
a
I'd
team.
Say Willow is especially just such a charming, like she feels so much like more of a real person than
real
Buffy
real
does,
real
right?
person.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't know if I'm just taking away too much, but to me this was, you know, your dreams are what are important and what you should follow and accept rather than the dreams of your parents. And I know that's just part of the theme for this episode, right? Because Buffy's mom is telling Buffy to be on the newspaper, the school newspaper, which was great because we were all in the school newspaper at some point. And Buffy, of course, makes a joke that nerds pick on those kids. And so, you know, Buffy's mom is telling Buffy what to do. Then Amy's mom is telling Amy what to do. But, you know, and Buffy just wants to follow her own dreams. So anyways, I don't know if that's just a theme in general for young people. You know, that's what you should be focusing on, your dreams, not your parents' dreams, not, you know. Anyways, so I don't know if I'm bringing too much into that, but.
No,
they seem, I think they brought it up.
I think it must be really hard to, because this is written by adults, like to get into that kind of headspace of those interactions with your parents and stuff to remember. To be able to remember that well enough to like write convincing dialogue as a teenager, like that's hard stuff, right?
I think so.
It was also really interesting for me to watch this because I just finished a comic that Mike has read, but I'm immediately trying to write a new comic. I want to have something to put online for October, and the first notes I was writing about were about trying to write like a teen witch comic, so. This episode was particularly like, oh, like it connects. And it made me think like, maybe I shouldn't write a Teen Witch comic.
What's your story for your Teen Witch comic?
I don't know yet. I wanted it to be short. My idea was basically something around teen witches as a gang, like drinking at a bike path, kind of like how we used to do as a kid, and then they meet something, and maybe sacrifice someone. I hadn't really put it all together yet. But.
All right. Let's go to predictions by Mike. Mike. So these are predictions from last episode. Charisma, Cordelia. Maybe she'll die in season one. That was prediction one.
Yep.
Two. There'll be the Hellmouth and more demons. So that's true in this episode. The witches instead of demons. But the second prediction three. Mom was going to get kidnapped. Four was Willow and Xander would become an item. So what are your predictions this week?
So I still stand by all those predictions.
Okay.
I think there's a possibility that Giles and Buffy's mom will get together.
Sure.
They at least have to have some kind of awkward date. It may not go well, but they're both looking after Buffy. They're like mom and dad of Buffy, and they need to get together in some way. Even if it doesn't happen literally, like literally, I think figuratively they will get together in some way in season one.
Okay.
Cordelia will continue to be punished and possibly die. Yeah, it's totally headed towards her death. Something terrible happens to her every episode.
Yeah, it's interesting because part of the setup for the show, right, is that Buffy is the character who in a normal horror movie dies early, but instead she has incredible strength and doesn't. But instead of that not being a trope anymore, they instead set up like this other character, Cordelia, who terrible things happen to. Like...
Yeah, but she's mean. She's mean, so she deserves it every time, right? Like, not at all.
Oh, she was sarcastic.
But they make her
better
so
go blind.
My other prediction is based on what's happened at the start of this episode, that there's no funeral for Jesse or for anybody from the Bronze, I think there will be no funerals. There'll be no funerals and no memorial services in season one. Maybe season two, they add that. No, it's not Heather's. Exactly.
Oh, you know what? Where we didn't go to this week? We didn't go to the Bronze. That's right. There was no Bronze action.
We didn't go to the Bronze. We also, Angel wasn't in this episode.
No, this is important. Yeah, lacked Angel.
There wasn't a meaningless Angel appearance like there was in the first two episodes where Angel just appears, offers no wisdom or information, and then disappears?
No. It's Angel free, apparently.
So, okay, this is interesting. I don't know what your opinions on Angel are yet. So.
Well, in episode one and two, Angel appears in the first episode, gives Buffy, like, a cross, but nothing else. And then episode two, he's like, hey, go in the sewers, take a left. Like, he's, you know, to find the vampires, whatever. But, like, basically no information. Like,
how about Angel's coat in the first episode?
Oh, love it. Crushed velvet? Yeah. It's such a mess. He's like a wannabe Brad Pitt style vampire.
So over designed. Gotta tone that down.
Yeah.
Alright, so I'm excited to go into episode 4 next week. Hopefully, unless anybody's got other stuff they want to throw into this one.
Oh, that does it. That does it for me.
Okay, great. So then next week,
episode 4. Thanks for inviting me to this, guys.
Well, we'll keep inviting you to the next one if you want to come back. You're a great guest. Loved having you on the show.
Thanks for listening. Reach out to us at BuffyVirgin.com in the comments section to talk more about Buffy. Anyway, thanks so much. Have a great week.